Thank you again for the invitation, and I will continue talking about a theme that I already mentioned yesterday when we had a workshop about urban education. I then talked a little bit about that the process of education and the formalization of education needs a designated space where this process can take place. And I'd now go a bit deeper into that and talk about urban school and class environment, because that was also a topic that came up yesterday during the workshop about education and class. I will once again connect to my own work about the pedagogical reform movement that was active in especially German-speaking cities in the beginning of the 20th century. I will furthermore focus in this kick-off presentation, this talk, about the development of educational spaces here in this city, in Berlin. Concerning learning about the past, I'm sorry, I will not give like any clear answers about what to learn about the past during this presentation, but hopefully we will come back to some critical issues during the discussion and talk in a while. The things I want to address is that the place of the school in the city, already in the beginning of the 20th century or even before that, became a class issue and has continued to be a class issue in cities. Working class education in primary schools was continually, like, spatially disadvantaged, and I will go into that furthermore. But still, there existed during this time, in the beginning of the 20th century, a close connection between, to play a little bit with words, between the reform and the form of educational space. If we move then just back, we stay in the same geographical place, this town of Berlin, but we move back in time. I also mentioned already yesterday that the demographic situation in the beginning of the 20th century was kind of very strained. The situation was almost beyond control due to the import of migrants and the urbanization process that was very, very demanding for all municipal services in this town. Just to give you a few numbers, between 1871 and 1918, the number of primary schools increased from being 53 to 312. That means that on average, it was 6 new school buildings were built every year in this town. But if you go deeper into the statistics, you see that only 285 of these schools had a building of their own. Primary schools tended sometimes to be forced to rent dwellings and apartments to there have their education. And I now quote the Berlin's Teacher Association, which wrote a critical letter to the Prussian Minister of Education in 1911. Many primary school children never get to know a classroom during their 8 compulsory years. All they know is dwellings and street. This was obviously a situation that especially were very demanding on new migrants and working class families recently arriving to the metropolis. They always ended up with the worst conditions. In 1905, a few companies, but one was especially successful in producing transportable barrack schools in Berlin. On the picture you see Leopoldplatz in Wedding with school buildings of temporary character. They didn't produce these schools fast enough, so the Prussian government had to use also old hospital barracks for teaching spaces. used previously in the Crimean War or in a German China expedition from 1901. After 1900, the municipality of Berlin definitely wanted to improve the situation of the primary schools. And the primary schools also tended to be like larger structures, bigger houses, which reflected that the school subjects were manifold. They got richer and more diverse. You had also very important improvement in technical and hygienic matters, for example, when it comes to toilet and running water, which also demanded like technical spaces in the schoolhouses. Gradually, also the official architects of the city abandoned the ideal of having like freestanding schoolhouses, which that previously was the model of building a school, and rather adjust the plans of the schools to be integrated in the urban texture. And this is also because of very stark economic reasons that the design and the location of the schoolhouses became determined by market prices on land. One big biographical and personal change in the administration of Berlin was the establishment of a new chief architect shortly before 1900. This is a very important figure for just combining the form and the reform of educational spaces, Ludwig Hoffmann. There was nothing to do about the case that the schools in the big city became larger, higher, and more compact. The lack of affordable space forced actually the school's project to develop on unattractive land. And what you see here, I have like four maps, which shows that many of the school buildings being built from 1900 up until the 1920s were actually built with a larger structure inside of the quarters on courtyard land, which was then cheaper to buy for the municipality. The schoolhouses still had to have some kind of a representative facade in the city. They have to have contact with the street. So the many schools during this time period being erected for the lower social strata, for the working class, for the proletarians, they have this kind of dual combination of a small representative house facing the street and a larger educational building being hidden on the courtyard. Courtyard schools actually became synonymous with working class environments in Berlin, beginning of the 20th century. This socio-geographical perspective, as I have chosen to call it, was a point of departure for anyone who wanted to analyze or describe the character of educational institutions in Berlin in the early 20th century. But this is now, I mean, there's of course complex factors also in this process. Still, there is an ideal, there's a striving of returning to or keeping some of the intimacy that was imagined being existed in the pre-industrial world or the pre-industrial environment where the schoolhouse was in the center of social life. These schools were often criticized, but sometimes, or equally, also taken in defense as worthy school environments for children. They could be criticized for being dark. I will show pictures of how they look dark, but they were on the other hand silent, which meant that the children could concentrate better. They were isolated, but on the other hand, they were kept from traffic and from the dirt of the street. Here you have one of these primary schools in Kreuzberg on Waldemarstrasse. You see that there is something different with this house on the street. It signals that it has a representative character. It is actually the administrative spaces and the apartment of the director of the school and two of the teachers' apartments that you see. The actual schoolhouse is located on the courtyard with a big educational space. Another way of dealing with this restraint, this economic land value restraint, was for the city to build so-called ensembles. This meant that the municipality of Berlin, this happened also in other German cities like in Dresden and Leipzig, they collected the investments in municipal services on the same place, meaning that they bought up a lot of land in a quarter or an undeveloped area to be able to then build for a multitude of municipal services that needed space. And then the schoolhouse could also be used for different purposes, and then it like received an extended public use. Ludwig Hoffmann called these kind of structures in German for Blockinnentyp, like something built in a block inside of another structure. What you see here is a schoolhouse. I will make it a little bigger. This is a schoolhouse on Beerwaldstraße, also in Kreuzberg, where the main educational building, the actual schoolhouse, is located totally hidden from the street in the inside of the quarter, and only with a representative building, once again, facing Wilmstrasse in this case. But when you look further, you also see that there have been other investments made in this block. You have a church being built, also subsidized by municipal money. You have a bathing facility, and you have a tax office. You also, at a certain period of time, when you look through the records, you also have a storage house for street cleaning devices in the same quarter. So this is an ensemble. Another version of trying to build for working class proletarian pupils was to use really bad land. And Hoffmann called this squeezed land. This is two schools being built with 13 years apart, two primary schools, on land directly connected to the Ringbahn in Prenzlauer Berg in Berlin. By the time the first school was built in 1900, there was no bridge over the tracks. So this was like the end of the city. Then the bridge came, and you could also use the other part, the other piece of land parcel on the other side of the track. So this is like one school courtyard, actually, being divided both by, not only by time, but with this track that then runs in the middle of this huge compact school complex about 6 meters below the actual school courtyards. What was built was increasingly also double schools, Doppelschulen. And this is a structure that was needed also to save space. Previously, girls and boys attended different schools. Now they had to attend the same school, but still in separate spaces. The only spaces they used in common was the auditorium and the gymnastic hall, if the school had one. And the school playground was often divided by a dividing wall. This is the girls' dividing wall in a school in Charlottenburg. You also see that they have quite beautiful ornaments all about girls playing on the girl side. Of course, on the look on the other side, you have a lot of boys playing on the wall in the ornaments. You could also use the fire gables as maps, like educational maps. Here is a school in Moabit, now unfortunately destroyed during the Second World War, where you have they have pictured parts of biological and natural history on the fire gables, in this kind of cramped space that was often designated for working class primary schools. Here's another one. It's the girls' part. During this time, and I think this is important, I mean, not to be, the conditions were harsh and the poverty was always very striking, but still there was a very strong will to do something beautiful and memorable about the spaces that still these huge amount of children used in the city in the beginning of the 20th century. So also in this artistic language about children and for children and their lives entered also the primary schools into the architecture. And a lot of artists in different wordings could say that it was as if the buildings themselves also could serve a pedagogical purpose, being like read and being communicated or communicating with pupils that moved around and spend their days in the school environment. Here you have a small girl, like a Kiriatid, sort of carrying the weight. It's also play with traditional architectural structures. It's also, of course, this is in Charlottenburg. The school is still there. Lietzensee, in close to that sea. And this is also, of course, the entrance to the girls' part of the school. There's a lot of work with ornaments, which also Ludwig Hoffmann especially designed a special financiation for in the municipal budget. And this is in schoolhouses in Moabit and Wedding. Also having this representative character that it's the Berlin Bear that learns this boy to read. And the other, you can go and watch them. This, I would love to actually take you on a walk because they are all over this, like, talk to children through school buildings from this time. The other ornament is called the bad grade. It's a boy that cries and being comforted by his school comrades. But, and this is important also, that it came up during our discussion, of course the access was not only into this, like, stone, very man-produced environment. You could also, and that was definitely something that were continually, or more, even more strongly so in the 20th century, integrated into the school activity, have access to environments of nature. It's a very strange way to write that, environments of nature. But natural environments also seem to be something strange to say. In this case, it was often allotment gardens that both individual working class families could have access to allotment gardens, but also increasingly so that school gardens were used for educational purposes. On the right here, you have a small school garden, or the class is posing in front of their school garden on the backside of the tenement houses in Neukölln. And the other picture is a more pedagogical, laid-out school garden from an industrial town in my own home country called Norrköping, which is one of those cities that is called the Manchester of... So that's the Manchester of Sweden. And in different ways... This was also an important educational space for people of low means and the children and the pupils from proletarian families. So this is my input, I would say, that you have that the place of the school, the educational place of the school, is a class issue. You haven't changed in that way, but just as that kind of simple statement, but of course the reality is very much different. That you have often this kind of spatially disadvantaged situation for pupils being located on a lower social strata. But as I showed, there was a lot of commitment to try to make even these environments into beautiful, like educational, profitable environments, even though the situation often were very harsh and restricted. And that, which I, of course, in my research think is very interesting, that you have this reform movement, which is not only about ideas and about different kind of ideologies, but it has to take place sometime. It has to be formed into the our material world, which means that educational space is something very material and very physical, and something I think we could continue to discuss also about how that has changed and what has developed up until today. So, yes. Thank you. That was my input.